In sport and life, we experience heartache and glory, elation and despair, and a million and one other feelings, chemical reactions and emotions in between. The challenge is how we deal with them. That is what Graham Fowler says. Few sports can be played in as much in the mind as cricket. When bowlers are hurdling the ball down at your head at 90 miles an hour, all fielders are crowded around the bat waiting to snap up an edge. Only the most resilient can thrive. End mind over batter. Great title. Former England batsman and leading coach Graham Fowler looks at the mental tools needed to deal with all aspects of the game and asks, what is mental strength? Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK. Author of Mind Over Batter, Graham Fowler. Graham, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. In life, as in cricket, mental strategies for sport and life. Do you think that cricket reflects life, or is it the other way around, Graham?
I think cricket reflects life, really. Because there are a lot of situations in cricket that you have to deal with, and a lot of them you have to deal with instantly. But obviously, over time, you build this experience. And I think the same thing applies to life. I eventually used a lot of the skills that I had learnt in cricket. I actually used them in my own life.
I don't think it matters
at what level you play cricket, be it club level or international. They're transferable skills.
Well, tell us a little bit about, for those who aren't familiar with your work and your career, tell us a little bit about your cricketing career for a start.
I played probably 17 years professionally, of which I played 21 test matches for England, 26 one-day internationals, and I was lucky enough to score 100 against the West Indies at Lord's, and the first Englishman to get a double century in a test match in India.
So why did you decide the time was right to write this book, Mind Over Batter? And congratulations, by the way, on the title. I think it's one of my titles of the year thus far.
Well, funnily enough, that came from a Twitter follower. Why did I decide to write it? Well, I think it was 2015, I wrote a book called Absolutely Fox, in which I discussed a lot of issues that I'd had with my own mental health. And also a lot to do with my sort of cricketing career. The publisher said that was sort of semi-autobiographical about me, and he wanted a semi-autobiographical one about my cricketing, how I view things, especially the mental side of stuff. I mean, I discussed mental health in the book again. It runs through that. But also there are little things that we can sort of learn and do that help us and people around us.
I mean, cricket, and especially test match cricket, is a game that is played at a certain pace. And would you agree that the mental side of cricket perhaps is the strongest in when it comes to test match? It is very much a battle in the mind, played over anything up to sort of 5 to 6 days.
Yeah, it's nothing but. I mean, there are lots and lots of players who are technically good enough to play test cricket. There are lots of them that are athletic enough to play cricket. But the thing that separates the good test players from the rest of us is their ability mentally to cope with the situations, not only as they crop up, but also know what they're going to go through and prepare themselves for it.
What was it like walking out that first time? And where was your first test match? Was it one of the great... Was it Lords? Was it Edgbaston? Where did you make your test debut?
My test debut was at Headingley against Pakistan. It was the last test match of the summer. And fortunately, I top scored in the game. It was a typical Headingley wicket it was seen in. And in the second innings, I got 86, I think it was, and the top scored in the game. But back then, I was very naive. I was a very young player. I'd come from being in Lancashire second 11 to test match cricket in 18 months. So it's quite a rapid rise. And to be honest, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing when I went out in that first test match. And I think in a lot of ways, the naivety at the time helped me because I had no fear whatsoever. I had no experience of what the games were like or what the pitch was like. I think that naivety helped me. But over time, you can't stay in that naive bubble and you have to learn and you have to adapt. And it's how you do that makes the difference.
What was it like when you look at and you are, because you said you went from playing seconds for Lancashire to test match cricket in a very short space of time. What's it like when there are people you're reading about and watching on TV, you know, people like, you know, Viv Richards, and the next thing you know, you're out there playing cricket against them? It must really sort of make you wonder what you're doing and questioning what you're doing out there.
It did. The first day at Headingley, we had practice, and I turned up, and Bob Willis, who was the captain, was in the dressing room, and Ian Botham was sitting in the other corner, and there were just the three of us in the room. And Bob Willis looks at me, and he said, "Foxy." I said, "Sorry?" He said, "Why do you call me that?" He said, "That's your name now." So I went downstairs to join the Nets, and he introduced me to the rest of the team as Foxy.
Right.
So not only did I not know these people, I knew Mike Gaffin and one or two of them vaguely, but all of a sudden, during my first test match, everybody was shouting Foxy at me, and I had no idea who they were talking to. So I had that to deal with as well. So it is quite interesting to 1 minute watching your fellow players on television, and then all of a sudden, you're in amongst it.
And I mean,
it is quite a strange environment to walk into.
And I mean, not only sort of any old players, just the three names you mentioned there, Willis, Botham, you know, and Gatting there. I mean, these are legendary cricket names.
Yeah, I mean, there was Gower and Lamb, and it was, I suppose if I'd thought about it, I could have been overawed. But as I said, I was in this little naive bubble and I didn't think about it. And Chris Cavalier, who I opened with, said to me, he said, "How do you like to play?" "Pardon?" He said, "Well, do you like to get off to a good start or leave the ball as much as possible?" "What?" And I'd never thought about this. And I thought, well, he wants an answer. So I just said, merit. I play on merit. If it's a good ball, I block it. If it's a bad ball, I hit it.
Fair enough. So, you've written the book, and you're dealing with mental health issues. You've been quite forward in this, and you even speak with Mike Brearley. Now, as a thoughtful captain, Mike Brearley perhaps is the most interesting character.
Yeah, my history with Mike was he was revered as probably the greatest captain ever. Particularly because he understood men and he understood how he worked, and it was really about his man management. So whenever I was at Lord's as a youngster, I was playing, but I would always try and seek him out and have a beer with him at the end of the day and talk with him and try and learn off him. So, and I've always enjoyed his company, and I think he must have thought, "Who's this cheeky little kid who always buys me a beer?" And then when it was decided that I should go and be psychoanalysed, there was only one person I could ever sit down with, and that was Mike Brearley, purely because he understands what it's like to be a cricketer and also what it's like to have this ambition, this just drive, this competitiveness, which just runs through every fragment of your life. And he understands success and failure. And he understands the working of a competitive cricketer's mind. So that was why I went and sat down with him. He was the only person I could ever envisage sitting down with.
And what do you think lessons that people can take from life? Because, I mean, the subtitle of the book is Mindful Strategies for Sport and Life. I mean, we're always taught that we can take some lessons from sport in our everyday life. Is it analytical thinking? Is it working under pressure? Is it being prepared? I mean, what are the cornerstones, do you think? Because we live in a 24/7 world where we are constantly bombarded by images on our smartphones, by our media, on our computers, and there's very little time to take a breath. People complain they've got very little time to take a breath. There's very little time to cope with things. And you could argue that when you're standing, you know, in the wicket at Lord's, and there's, you know, something like Sir Viv Richards bearing down at you at high speed, you know, or some bowler coming down at you at high speed, you have very little time to think analytically as well. What messages, what lessons do you think we can learn from the pitch into the real life?
Well, I think people will take many different things away, I hope. I mean, even from preparation of your kit, making sure your kit's perfect, that it suits you, that it does the job. But also the other thing is that when you're standing in the middle and you're waiting to face the ball off Joel Garner and Malcolm Marshall, you have nothing else to think about but that ball. So all you ever do is you just blank everything else out that exists in the world and you just focus on that ball. And you deal with it, and hopefully you're still there the next ball. And whatever's happened to the previous ball, that's gone. So you then look forward to the next ball. And I think keeping things simple sometimes, not just in cricket, but in all aspects, makes things far easier to deal with. Because we often clutter our lives up by complicating things. And I think there's a lesson to be learned in trying to keep it simple. So that when you're at the office, all you're doing is you work at the office. When you're at home, you're not thinking about the office, you're thinking about your family life. And I think that compartmentalisation is very, very important. And like old people, I mean, I spoke to hundreds of county cricketers in the town, and I sometimes wouldn't learn anything from them. And other times, I'd take away an absolute gem. And I don't even think they knew they'd given it to me. And I think I'm hoping that mind over matter is a little bit like that. If you just take one thing away from a book that improves your life or just improves you in understanding your life, I think it's been worthwhile. And I hope that's the case.
Talking about taking things away, I'm just thinking of, was there any, I mean, obviously the great Mike Brearley aside, is there any particular pearl of wisdom? I mean, and it's a book of anecdote as well, or something you took from somebody like an Ian Botham, or a Viv Richards, or shudder to think a Mike Gatting.
Yeah, I mean, well, no, including that, we got 200 together in the Madras Test match. I batted with him a long time, but I remember being in the Adelaide dressing room once with Ian Botham. And he said to me, it was just me and him in the room. And he said, come on, Foxy. He said, if you bat all day, we can save this test match. And I just stupidly said, what, bat all day? I said, I'm just a little lad from Accrington. I'm not a superstar like you. And he picked me up by my shirt and he shoved me against the wall and he said, how do you think I started? And that completely and utterly changed my outlook on cricket and also on other things. Because you then go, actually, yes, I can actually do something. I can actually raise up to this level. And that really changed my thinking. And I don't think he knew he'd done it. I've told him since, obviously, because he's a good friend. But you could take something, you know, there are times when you take something away from somebody, and it does actually change your life. And it does actually change your outlook. And that was one classic one for me I'll never forget. I mean, Clive Lloyd was also an inspiration. You know, there've been lots of, you know, people who've been fantastic inspiration. Some of them even umpires, because they're in the best place to see the game, see you back, and you only have to have a quiet word with them, and they'll go, "Actually, you're not doing this like you normally do. Wow, thank you." So, they might just say, "Well, you're not going back and across as far as you normally do." Ah, thank you. That's why I'm not lining it up properly. So real good advice, can come from all over the place.
Keep your mind open to advice from all over the place. What was the, in your cricket career, what was the time when you had to look at your mental strength, you had to dig your deepest and you had to really to work it? And what was the time that you think you broke through and you used your mental strategies and came out on top?
Well, the funny thing about that was, my last two test matches got 201 and 69 in India. And then we came back to England and I had a problem with my neck, and I was getting pins and needles down my fingers, down into my hands. And I found out I had two crushed vertebrae in my neck, which I'd done 7 years earlier in a car accident. And I think dealing with that was when my real mental strength came through. I went through a horrible season in 85. Excuse me again. In 80, the winter of 85, I had operations on my neck, and that got me going again, but it was the mental strength to come back for it. I knew that my England career would probably be over, but then you've got to realise, right, I still want to play cricket. I still want to do the job. How do I get back to where I was before? And that was the real time when my ability to cope with things really came through.
What do you hope that people take then from the book Mind Ever Better, Mental Strategies for Sport and Life, Graham?
Well, I just hope that they manage to take something away that helps them understand them a bit better and helps them enjoy being them just a little bit more. Because we could all do with a little bit of self-improvement, which can be found, I think. And I really hope that people enjoy being them a little bit more after reading the book.
The book is called Mind Over Batter, Mental Strategies for Sport and Life. It's by Graham Fowler. It's out now with Simon & Schuster. Graham, if people want to find out more about the book, how can they find you? Is there a social media page? Is there a website? How can they get in touch with you?
How do they get in touch with me? Well, they can follow me on Twitter, I suppose.
Yeah.
Get in touch with me that way. My username is G Foxy Fowler. So people can get in touch that way. If they just want to get the book, then it's available from all the usual outlets. And there's also, believe it or not, I've done an audio book as well.
Oh, superb. So you can hear you speaking about reading the book as well.
Yes, if you want to listen to a lad from Accrington read his own book, you can go and do that.
Only that begs the question. Graham, after this one, what are you up to next? What are your plans for the next couple of months?
I'm doing some mentoring work at Durham County Cricket Club, and I'm really enjoying that and looking forward to getting more stuck in. And we've also got some mental health pilot schemes, which we're trying to develop. A friend and I did the one for the ECB, and it worked. It was superb. So we're trying to develop those. So that's what it is for the next couple of months.
And with the summer of cricket almost upon us, what are you looking forward to watching most?
You're going to laugh now. I'm really looking forward to watching the young players at Durham improve.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'll be watching the test cricket and stuff, but because I'll be hands-on at Durham, watching people improve, just because a little bit of help you give them, that's almost more satisfying than scoring runs yourself.
The book is called Mind Over Matter. It's by the great Graham Fowler. Graham, it's been a pleasure to speak to you this morning.
And you, thank you.
Take care.